Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here.
And wide-eyed and ready to pounce is Mike Cosentino.
And we're going to be discussing what should Democrats do to get ready for the presidential election.
There's a lot of talk about
congressional elections in 2020. So right now, folks, there's this huge debate within the Democratic Party, from the progressive group and faction to the sort of more mainstream folks, about what kind of candidate is needed and how to run this race. And I think that's what we're going to address, Mike, is just a theory. So do we need a progressive candidate? Do we need a charismatic candidate? And see, there's arguments, folks, for a lot of different things. Obama's charisma was kind of odd because he's a very cool person, but his rhetoric and his person inspired. And so did Bill Clinton. I know Bill Clinton is down in the doghouse now for his many faults, but he was charismatic and able to win. And then we had Clinton run in 2016, and she's not charismatic. She's a wooden speaker. She's extremely controlled, and she lost. So do we need a charismatic
person? She
wears
really funny clothes.
Do we need a progressive candidate to activate the young people? The Democratic gains, Mike, were almost all in wealthy suburbs surrounding the cities, and in moderate suburbs like in Orange County in California, which was the bastion of the Republican Party when I was young, is now completely represented by Democrats. The whole thing has switched.
I got lots of words for you, but three words are going to be Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. We're going to get her name right now. The 28-year-old from New York, that was, you know, the whole dancing video. Now, part of the problem of here, let's start with the problems, and then we'll come up with the solution. Okay. The problem is, for whatever reason, and it's really hard not to use four-letter words at this point, for whatever reason, Trump still has an allure to the elites in New York, the elites everywhere, and even Hollywood. Trump still has, you know, if they want to put the money on the winning horse, Trump, for whatever reason, they still think Trump's got it.
I think the reason, Mike, is not, you know, I mean, years ago I talked to a lot of wealthy people in New York way back, 30 years ago. And they just think about things differently than we do.
In other words,
they don't, you know, when somebody is running, Bush is running, what they ask themselves is he good for our bottom line, our classes? Yeah. Bottom line. Yeah. That's what they add. So they make, wow, this kind of weird religious stuff, and we don't like that, but is he going to deliver for us? And the same way when I talk to military folks, you know, will it, you know, a guy may be a little, you know, one
a
way
little.
Or the other, stable, but is he going to deliver the money that we need
for
the military?
He doesn't believe in anything the military is out there for. He doesn't support anything. He believes in photo ops with military. That's the only thing the military is good for.
Pretty much. I can't disagree with that. Those are the sort of issues that I think we need to address, Mike. And I think Mike and I are going to both agree a lot and also disagree a lot. And we ask you folks really to begin thinking about this yourself.
Okay, so
early in the election, right, Mike?
It's not. They're starting, we're starting. I saw that on CNN the other day. Everybody, you know, Elizabeth Warren is out there. Other candidates are out there. So we need to start thinking about that. And it's too important. And it also, the more we think about it and the more those people assert themselves, then the less impact Trump has.
I think we don't know who's going to come out as the candidate to be elected. I think one thing, Mike, that I like is our primary process, horrible as it is, does weed out who can handle the stress of the campaign and who can run a campaign. And we'll also get a much better picture of them. So almost every candidate you can imagine, there's a negative and a positive. So we were talking about Elizabeth Warren before the show. The negative is she's not a great speaker. She's a little strident, they say. The positive is that she's been a campaigner for consumer rights way before she went in politics. She's been absolutely consistent and determined to help American consumers and American workers. And she has extremely good policies. At least a lot of us think so.
She got a lot, and she stood up to Trump. She's got a lot of, attention right after Trump got elected because she did that. She, there was, this, whatever silliness among the media that they were reporting every lie he said, and he said 15 or 20 a day, and Warren pointed some of those out, and that so she became the darling of the left early on. Now a little she's gotten tarnished a little bit just because she's been around a while, but then she declares her candidate. So she's the first one. Here it is, January 2019. We know we got Elizabeth Warren. It's kind of doing exploratories for the presidency. But I want to talk about what Michael Moore said. He believes we need a beloved American. We need a beloved candidate. We need to find a few of those. Now, how would you define? Now, I'm okay with fire. We're talking about the Chuck Schumers and Nancy Pelosi's on one side. And these are the people, when I go to my Democratic meetings in Cottonwood, I hear from my young people, get rid of these fossils. Get rid of them. I mean, you know, they're allowed to stay alive. We don't have to kill them and chew them up into food.
So, but how do we measure? What are the Democratic Party values that are going to emerge from this contest? Do we want an experienced person?
No, Mike,
listen. The values that are going to emerge are, do we want someone as experienced as Nancy Pelosi being the Speaker of the House, or do we want someone new and dynamic? And those arguments are going to be played out over the whole next 2 years.
No.
And they're going to be debates like you and I will debate, and people will debate about what's important and what Democrats should be doing.
Is Mike Cosentino glad Nancy Pelosi is Speaker of the House? Yes. She's got the experience. She's got the guts to stand up to Trump. Now, however, we're talking 2 years from now.
Right.
So we want to talk about values. Let's talk about Medicare for all. The Democrats better. Let's talk about free college. The Democrats better. Let's talk about doing away with student debt. The Democrats better. Let's talk about the ERA. The Democrats better. Those are the values that they've got to make it so different from Trump. Here's the thing that I believe this with my whole heart. Because I heard it from a 28-year-old sitting at the bar. So it must be true. He says this, and I like this. He says, you know why they like Trump? Because they don't care. They said, you know what? You screwed it up, meaning the baby boomers. You screwed it up for us. Just like you said at the beginning of the show, there's nothing in this for me, so let him screw it all up. That's fine. We'll take Trump and just watch him screw it all up and laugh all the way.
I don't know. Maybe that's in retrospect. I think a lot of young people seem to me decided that politics doesn't affect them, Mike, right? That's what you're saying. And so it's easy to sit back and take pot shots at everybody when you don't really care what's going on.
Yes, Steve, that's partially
Isn't
true.
Isn't that true?
Yeah, it is true. But they believe it doesn't affect them, but even if it does, they don't care. They're saying it doesn't affect them enough. It doesn't affect them in that deep sort of way it affects me and you. You and I lose sleep because we're watching a country change. We're watching Cindy McCain said last night on TV, the one soundbite they gave her, that the country has lost its way. And so we're going to hire at least Arizona, and this is a big deal for Arizona. Arizona is going to start hearing a lot more from Cindy McCain, I think. Her own political future is going to be discussed in the next couple of weeks.
Well, when we look at the Democratic gains in the 2018 election,
okay,
the analysis is that almost all the gains are in what they call wealthy suburbs, but these are actually suburbs, very mixed economic suburbs, many of them, around the cities. That's where the gain in Democratic vote was. Many of those people are doing very well in the new economy. Unlike a lot of Trump voters are doing very badly.
I'm going to argue with you.
No, wait. A lot of Trump voters doing very badly in the new economy. A lot of the Democratic voters around the suburbs are doing well in the new economy. The fact, would these folks who are sort of middle class really want Medicare for all once they find out how much it costs?
Yeah, they do. I believe that the analysis I'm seeing, and that's what I heard after the election, that that's where Democrats won. And we're going to talk a lot about that. But he won, the Democrats, the surprising thing that should bother Trump and Trump supporters is that Democrats did really well with white working class guys. Everybody that people thought put him in office. They did really well with blue collar working class white men. Democrats did. Here's the deal with the numbers.
The numbers are still not good in what terms of white men voting for Democrats, Mike.
But
they're not.
They made huge inroads in so many places. Places where Trump won by 18, 19, 20 points. Trump won white, blue collar, working men. They lost by 20, 21 points in some of those places. Not all of them, but in, and I think that trend is only going to continue. There's going to be more and more of that. Yes, some of those guys were unwilling after 2 years to give up their mistake. Now they are. Here's the deal. In any, the Democrats won. Right after the election, it came out, it was so slow because it took so long. Right. Democrats won more votes than any other midterm by any party in the history of this country. Let me say that again. They won by more votes. They won by more than Nixon after Watergate was huge in 74.
We're talking percentages, Michael. Or
they won by more than that.
Numbers. The raw numbers.
I'm talking raw numbers. So they got 40 seats. They needed 23 seats, and everybody wasn't sure. Nobody was sure. Are they going to get them? Are they going to get them? Maybe. They got 40 seats, and if they would have got the same numbers as historically, they wouldn't have won 60 or 70 seats.
Right,
so now we want to talk about gerrymandering.
Utah
outlaws gerrymandering. Utah, nice liberal Utah. Why do they outlaw gerrymandering, Steve?
Why does Arizona have a commission?
An independent commission
is because of the misuse of the gerrymandering possibilities. We hope more and more states will do that. The kind of electoral commissions we have in Arizona are not perfect, you know, but they're a lot better than this systematic. The problem, folks, is that the computerization has gotten so good that they can actually go block by block and build a constituency.
They did that because it doesn't take, everybody can see, and you don't have to be a statistician to see. There's more liberals in this country than conservatives. Lots more. So they had to gerrymander to win. They did it. They won. Now it's over.
I think they're afraid demographically that the demographics are against them because young people mostly don't
so
vote.
So now they're going to dump.
Don't care.
So the Democrats want to get rid of it, and the Republicans want to get rid of it even more because they don't want the Democrats to have it.
So the problem with gerrymandering is there's, you know, when it was a modest thing, kind of crudely done, you could kind of wink at it and both parties were doing it. Now it's a highly computerized way. We're getting into a less and less representative democracy. This is a representative democracy, as people say, and that means that we elect representatives. But if we don't elect them on a truly democratic basis, then the Congress. So as what Mike was saying earlier, what was the statistic, Mike? If their votes were distributed fairly and under, ungerrymandered way,
right,
they would have picked up 60 seats instead of 40.
That's
okay,
right,
folks. These are really solid statistics we have out there about what happens with gerrymandering. You can look at a state like Pennsylvania and figure out exactly what the vote is, and then who ends up with what. And so there's been some court actions and some political actions that have improved the situations in places like Pennsylvania, other places not so good.
Pennsylvania, but, Wisconsin, Michigan now have Democratic governors. They didn't before. Those are three states that were key to Trump's victory. Those are going to go. Now, the other thing that CNN talked about, giving their props, they talked about the Midwest path, the Southwest path, of which Arizona plays. Because as we know, we are now considered a Democrat. We have five Democratic representatives, and we have four Republican representatives. So by all the way they count these things, we're a blue. It's hard to believe, but we're a blue state.
We're not a blue state. I don't think we're a purple state. We still have a very strong Republican Party and stuff here. And we still elect, at least on the local level, some of the most preposterously stupid representatives in, like, Sylvia Allen and Bob Thorpe that must be in the United States. They would win some kind of contest, Mike. I mean, really. I mean, they're not conservative. They're idiots. So, but they got reelected.
They did.
And not by much, but they did get reelected.
Yep.
So, I guess the debate going on is what kind of a candidate, can we make any, let me ask you this, Mike.
Sure.
Can we make any generalizations about do we need a woman candidate? Do we need a minority candidate? Do we need a white male candidate that can bring back, Trump voters? Do we need, is there any, I guess, gender, ethnicity, racial thing that we should decide this stuff ahead of time?
Well, and that depends who you talk. Anybody under 40 says no. That nobody cares about that. Anybody over 60 says yes. You need a white male at least somewhere on the ticket to balance the and this is more than one, but I have one that I use. My 82-year-old, still very active, still he believes. And he looked at me when I said the same thing I'm telling you right now, that no, race, ethnicity does not matter. It's not that day anymore.
So people, Democrats are saying, oh, we need a woman candidate before we even look at the women candidates
this.
And the men candidates.
That's good. That's good.
You don't think that's a good idea?
Well, let's talk. The Democratic Party of Arizona has very strict rules in their bylaws about if you have a Democratic chair, a woman chair, then you have to have a male vice chair. And first, and then you have to have a female second vice chair and a male third vice chair. And if the secretary is a male, the treasurer's got to be a female, and so on. And so very clear gender rules.
But this is a presidential election. At this point, folks, they're talking about up to 20 candidates. And now this is the press going around and guessing who may or may not run. And so far, I think we have just one candidate, Elizabeth Warren, who's founded, you found an exploratory committee, folks, so you can raise money for a campaign.
Right.
It doesn't commit you to actually running. And what happens is if your exploratory committee does terrible and doesn't raise any money and you don't get anybody listening to you, then you sort of fade away. But we have a potential of all these candidates. So the question is, so Trump voters, I guess we're more and more seeing it as a sort of white male resentment of the collapse of their place in American society, their dominance of American society. We're also seeing a lot of working class folks who are really, right or wrong, and I think, of course, they're wrong, focused on social issues, you know, like gay rights and stuff, and they don't agree with it. They're, I guess, socially and religiously conservative. And so this is a extraordinarily complex thing. And what you do, and let me finish, Mike, is just that you have to put together, a majority out of all these disparate groups.
Disparate.
Disparate group, Mike.
Yeah.
Mike's the English teacher. So,
yeah.
And you have to put together a kind of a winning combination out of these folks. So do you have a, do you, how much should we try to win over some of the Trump voters who may now be feeling, remorse, particularly those who really believed his ideas about having more factories and had no idea what he was going to do to the farm community in the Midwest.
Going back to what you said, the most important thing you said was money. Can they raise money? The first question, this is 2018, the first question we ask of any candidate, anybody asks that's in politics, says, can they raise money? You just said Elizabeth Warren. She's doing her exploratory thing. The main reason for that, you also correctly said, was to see if she could raise money.
All right. So Elizabeth Warren, let's take her as an example. So she's the one out there. She has an exploratory committee, and she's going around, and she's giving speeches, and we've seen how many people show up for her speeches, which is, in her case, a lot. But Candace can start out really slow, too, and build up support as they go along. I think that we really, you know, we hear a scuttlebutt, we should have this and we should have that. But I think we don't know what the candidates are like as candidates at this point. We know what Elizabeth Warren, for example, has done in the past to protect American consumers, but we don't know what kind of candidate she's going to be. Certainly popular in Massachusetts, but will she be able to win people over and win an election in the country at large? And if not her, who's gonna, we see, Joe Biden is thinking of running, Bernie's thinking of running again. We won't go there, folks, right, Mike? Cause like it, at this point, it's sort of an endless. We could spend the whole time just listing names of possible contenders.
I talked about the Biden-Beto ticket, the guy from Texas, this guy who ran against Ted Cruz in Texas, Beto O'Rourke.
Okay. Here's an example of a really charismatic guy who can really relate to voters, and he almost beat Ted Cruz in Texas.
Right.
With all of Tex Cruz's massive amount of money and support and all the, everything else.
According to my emails, these guys are talking seriously about an exploratory committee. They really want to see what they can do. Now, I have to admit, it is intriguing from a casting, standpoint. You know, I love Joe Biden. It's really hard for me to listen to my young Democrats, my millennials, say, no, you put Biden up, we're gone. You put Biden anywhere near, we're gone.
So we have in Joe Biden a really good example. He's been Vice President of the United States. Has really good record. Honorable man.
He's warm, fuzzy, smart.
And all the rest.
Things. He's got a story.
But how old is he now? He's in his 70s.
We don't ask that question. Since John McCain, Donald Trump, we don't ask old. I mean, unless they are really wheelchair.
But if, I guess what I'm uncertain about, folks, is I guess my real take is that we have to see how this plays out, and I would recommend people to keep an open mind about the candidates and the process.
Let's go down.
And you're going to have to be tolerant of this very early start to elections, and you're going to have to be tolerant of fundraising, because particularly Democratic candidates actually have to raise a ton of money from ordinary people, and so you're going to get email letters and you're going to get phone calls and stuff. They don't have, in general, nearly as many, even close, huge donors. And they don't have as big and powerful super PACs and stuff. So they're going to irritate you if you're a Democrat by trying to raise money for it. I think the thing is to look at these candidates carefully. Look at how they campaign. And I've had this debate before, but, there is an element an election is not a philosophical discussion. It has a philosophical and political and ideological aspect. But it's also a contest, and you need folks who can win contests, right, Mike?
Right. And part of this is about the hard work. Part of this is about exactly what Democrats and the Red Rocks does. Part of this is about what the Arizona Democratic Party did, and that is regardless of who it is. And we're going to go down the list because this, we're 25 minutes into the show, and so we all we mention is Biden, Beto O'Rourke. We mentioned Elizabeth Harris, but we got to mention Kamala Harris. We got to mention Kirsten Gillibrand. I mean, all these. Go ahead and mention Julian Castro. These are all huge possibilities. We got to mention Bernie Sanders. You know, people like me, I'd vote for Bernie tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'd leave home and work for Bernie's campaign. Does an old white Jew from Vermont have a chance? I mean, that was my friends. He's saying, "You're kidding! You're kidding yourself." When he was getting 11, 12, he got 11,000 people in Arizona to come to his rally, and then he was getting 20,000, 25,000 people coming to his rallies, and people are still saying, "You can't elect a Jew, especially one who's running as a Democrat, regardless of what he is." Anyway, I don't believe that. I think Bernie would do well. He certainly has the following. He has this loyal base. I don't want to talk about. But
well,
Bernie's
I think
be back.
This thing.
What did he say? What did he say on TV? He said, "If I'm the best candidate, I will run."
Okay, so when candidates say that, they're sometimes actually being straightforwardly honest. You know, if there's a good candidate in the race, I'm not going to jump in because it's such a long, painful, expensive thing. There's a candidate I like and think will win and good, why should I jump in there except for ego and career reason? A lot of them will jump in anyway because, again, there's a lot of idealism in politics, and I think younger people don't understand how idealistic so many players in politics are, and they don't understand how honest most of them are. The problem is, honesty gets shaded. And so if all your campaign contributors are these industry groups of lobbyists and you're going to be wanting to do the right thing for medical care for American people, but the medical devices group has given you a whole lot of money, and even though it's not a direct bribe, even though you think, well, these guys are my supporters, they gave.
So you're delivering.
So am I going to be as hard on them? What do you think, Mike?
We got it, Steve. That politics is corrupting. Is a corrupting influence because of the money. The first thing the Democrats need to do is do legislation to get rid of Citizens United. First thing. I mean, protect our vote. This is
gotta get elected first, Mike.
According to what I saw, the first thing that Nancy Pelosi was going to do was make sure everybody could get registered to vote and those voting barriers came down. The signature laws, once again, going back to Cindy McCain, she says sometimes she signs her name Cindy McCain, sometimes she signs C. McCain. I do M. Cosentino. I do Mike. So these signature laws are definitely unconstitutional. I want to quote for a minute from
how to get a fair election with the suit.
That's
you're
right.
Talking about
the first
explain
thing
to folks what you're talking about.
If the
about.
Democrats work on fair elections, everybody's going to see that, and it will cross bridges between millennials and between the generation.
Explain a little to folks about what signature rules and stuff are.
Oh well, to prevent the people from the signatures had to match before they would let you your signature on the and your registration form, and when you presented yourself to vote had to match in some states, or at least they were trying to pass that, and had turned
absolute
people down.
Absolute matches.
Absolute matches. Yeah, absolute matches. We're talking swirls and dots and everything.
What happened in Arizona?
Voter suppression. And we're talking about the only way the other side can win, and they know it. We already said liberals outnumber conservatives by lots. The only way they can win is either by cheating or voter suppression. And they're doing both, and they've done that very well.
I think they think that the demographics are against them. Opposition to gay marriage, you saw how that collapsed when younger people just literally didn't buy into it at all.
30 minutes into the show, we got to talk about ballot propositions.
That's 30 minutes, Mike.
George, I said 30 minutes into the show. 30 minutes into the show, George Bush won 2004 by putting ballot propositions, 14 gay marriage ballot propositions in 14 states, and turned out enough people to And that's what marijuana should be on every state it's not legal in already. It should be on. This is what the Democrats need to do in the next years. And this is Michael Bourne. This isn't Mike Cosentino, although I agree with it. Democrats need to put legalization of marijuana on every ballot in the state where it's not to turn out young people.
All right.
They turn out like crazy. I want to say this, too. I want to add this because it's driving me crazy. This is what Americans will get in 2020, they've already seen in 2016 and 2018. Donald Trump's vulgarity, his instability, his misogyny, his spite, his self-absorption, his bigoted white identity politics, his sociopathology, his, as far as I'm concerned, psychopathology, he stokes to arouse his base, and his mired in his own pathology, Trump cannot materially expand share of the electorate.
But so is he going to run, Mike?
But he's got his 33%. Maybe he's got 38. Does it bother you that 38% of Americans would vote for this idiot?
Of course. But what I'm thinking is Trump going to run? Remember, we've got Mueller's investigation is still not produced its final blow. And so is he going to run? Is he going to be forced out? Are we going to have Mike Pence running against some other Republicans? The thing is, I'm just reminding myself and you, Mike, is that we really don't know what's happening. We don't even know if Trump's going to run again. We don't know.
Well, just the fact that he says it every day, maybe three or four times a day. I'm only basing it on the fact that he says it three or four times
a day. Well, I'm not saying he won't. I'm just saying we don't really know. I mean, there's a lot of factors in play, and we don't know which one of these Democratic candidates which will be able to relate to the American people. And so you have someone like Hillary Clinton, who has dozens and dozens of position papers that would have helped the American worker a great deal. But she wasn't able to communicate them. And unfortunately, politics is not just, I mean, there are policy guys who come up with good ideas, but you have to be able to communicate it, and you have some vision. Obama had a vision of a new America. He wasn't able to carry it out because the Republicans blocked a lot of it, but he had a vision, and he inspired people. And Trump inspired people too for the wrong reason. There's these populist dictatorist wannabe boys, you know, girls, whatever. People.
Doing very well worldwide, Brazil. I wanted to ask you this, beloved American, Michael Moore. Who fits that ticket? Moore says that's what the Democrats need. Now, is there an agenda here? Is he trying to pull somebody out? Is he trying to tell Michelle Obama? Is he trying to tell, I don't know, I'm trying to think of Hollywood people that are, is he trying to tell Tom Hanks, who's making more political noise than we've ever heard? We're hearing political noises from people we've never expected. Mark Hamill, for God's sakes, we're talking Star Wars. Princess Leia's brother.
Okay, so you mentioned that Donald Trump has about 33% of the vote. My theory is that the 33% actually don't like him that much anymore, that they like what he's standing for, which is the reassertion of conservative, white, basically male power in the United States. They like what he's doing. They like him blocking immigrants. They like him undercutting the legislation that protects people from minorities in schools. They like all of that stuff. I mean, they really are. But whether they like Trump as much as they did when they started voting for him, I don't know. He's unlikely to have anyone primary him, right, Mike? I mean, so if Trump decides to run, I would think the odds, folks, then he's going to be the Republican candidate.
I'm going to disagree with you. I think there are Republicans chomping at the bit to challenge. This is blood in the water. Donald Trump is. Nobody can understand.
But his support among Republicans, Mike, is still almost like 80%, 70-80%. It's fallen among independents, and it's just non-existent pretty much among Democrats. But among his Republican voters, he still has a support. I don't know whether he's going to run or not. I am skeptical, but I actually don't know. And the race will develop very differently depending who the Republican candidate is and who the Democratic candidate is. And so we have a long, and I'm afraid frustrating for many of you folks, campaign to play out. You don't have to pay attention to the campaign yet, certainly. You know, we're 2 years out, but wow, there's no way the candidates can sort of sit on their hands, right?
Well, some big thing. No, there's no way the candidates, there's too much going on. So let's, once again, maybe 40 House seats, 300 state legislators. That's a lot. And that, when the Republicans started taking over the state legislatures and doing the gerrymandering, nobody thought it would work as well as it did. Little by little, the Koch brothers and other, they took over the state. So the Democrats took 300 of those back, several governorships, 400 seats in the House. So we now have checks and balances again, more than we've had in a long time.
And of course we have government stalemate.
But we still have the Electoral College. Don't forget what took the election from us was, besides the Russians, was the Electoral College.
No, I mean, Trump lost by almost 10 million votes.
There you go.
And yet he won the presidency. I mean, there is a real problem. What I would like to see to be part of the campaign, Mike, let me see what you think about this, is having the, what we've been talking about is, the lack of the fading of representational democracy in America as being an issue. And I don't know how you would frame it well, but in the specific part, that's voter suppression, that's gerrymandering, that's these massive, massive amounts of money that are pouring in. And certainly the wealthy folks have gotten a huge batch of money. I mean, I suppose the Koch brothers got enough money to fund the next 20 campaigns off the Trump tax cut. So we're gonna hit. It's going to be a big mess, Mike. It's going to be money.
Here it is. We waited 37 minutes into the show for me to tell you the only thing you needed to say. We could have wrapped this up and we could have talked about.
All right, Mike, I'm waiting for the magic word.
We could have talked about Italian recipes for
the rest
of the show.
Is a duck going to drop down from the ceiling?
Yeah,
that's an old, for older folks, that's the old Groucho Marx.
That's right. I did shave off my mustache because the similarity was too much. It's turnout. That's what I've been saying. In order for Democrats to win, let's be clear, in order for Democrats to win in 2020, regardless of whatever happens, the minorities and Democratic supporters need to turn out. We're talking about young people, just like they did in 2018. We need those young people. We need those minorities a little bit more, and we're home free. Right. Turnout. It is what we do, by the way, is what Democrats do better than Republicans.
What I'm thinking is that we need to win. Democrats need to win big enough in 2020 so that we get the Senate back, even though that's a tough call. And we get the presidency and we keep the House. So, because things are not going to happen. We're going to have stalemate until one side gets stronger than the other. And we need a fairly decisive election. So what I would like is a decisive election rather than a really, really close one where we just barely win.
That's the Obama. That was the Obama. He said he knew because of voter suppression, he knew he had to win. 5% was minimum.
Yeah.
In other words, like you said, most times people plan for 1 or 2%. They'll be thrilled with. Obama knew in 2008 and even in 2012 that he had. Because, so there would be no question. There wouldn't be those weeks and weeks of chaps and hanging ballots and all those other things.
He had to win big enough. I mean, and the same thing, what happened to Hillary is Hillary
and he
won
did.
By 10 million votes, but it wasn't big enough because of the way the system is set up.
You know, that's the only thing that keeps me from eating my shotgun. And that's, I get up every morning, you know, a black guy, a black Democrat, won twice. In America, by big margins. Fine, we got Donald.
And then we got Trump.
We got Donald Trump now. But we're still that country that elected Barack Obama.
I guess, I guess I still just don't know where things are going. Trump seems increasingly unstable. So that's the reason I think that I'm not sure that he's going to make it through.
Yeah, that's a good
But
point.
If he decides he wants wants the nomination from the Republican Party, I don't see, Mike, even with some challenges, how they're going to take it away from him, given the support he has among this base. I mean, I don't think the base likes him as much as they once
did,
but I think that they see him doing what they want done.
Do you see, and then the others don't care. The millennials just say, yeah, throw a wrench in it, it's all messed up, start over. And that's my young man at the bar. That's what he thinks is the way to do it. They support Trump because he's not Biden, because he's not Obama. Well, first I want to make sure we get these in. I want to talk about Women's March. Women's March in Sedona. This is the third annual, guys. I'm not telling. Some people are looking forward to this, and then this is the third annual Women's March Sedona. It's going to be on January 19th. Look it up on the internet. It's all over Facebook. Sedona Action Network. Toby Friedman's Sedona Action Network has all of these things I'm about to tell you are all there. So if you miss a detail.
When it's going to start, where, and all the rest of the details you may need to know.
You know, all I know is it's ending at Vino de Sedona, and I'll be there with an open bottle of wine after you come out of the freezing rain. January 19th, check out Sedona Action Network. You want to talk about Democrats of the Red Rocks, their wonderful meeting is going to be at Old Sedona. It's a breakfast meeting. Starts at around 8:30. We got Harriet Young and Ann Schneider, both political wonks. They're activists in their own right. They have some. It's going to be fascinating discussion on prison reform, on politics in general.
We've interviewed Harriet many times. Maybe we should interview her for the show.
Many times. We should get him in. She was a political science professor at NAU for a long time. And our Katie Hobbs, as far as I'm concerned, the next governor of Arizona, next Democratic governor anyway, is going to be here in Sedona on Sunday, January 27th, at Doar's annual meeting.
4 to 7 p.m. at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church.
Thank you.
Go to the Doar website for the full of that. Yeah. But it's fairly simple. It's been at St. Andrew's for the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
And it begins in the afternoon and have a series of really good speakers. Anything else we need to announce, Mike? We got a couple of minutes left.
Just to review, we got the Women's March on the 19th. We got the Doar meeting with Harriet Young and Ann Schneider on the 17th. We got Katie Hobbs and a slate of other speakers, by the way.
It's a big slate.
At the January 27th. So January 17th, 19th, 27th. We got Democratic activity right here in Sedona. All good stuff. You'll meet a lot of really nice people. And we've had several of them on the show over the course of our seven years.
I'm going to be gone next week, Mike. Who are you going to have on the show?
You know, I'm thinking of doing the Jen Nichols. I know we've talked a lot about charter schools before, but the charter school, you know, we have this corrupt situation in Arizona, which blows up my head. You got these legislators who control charter schools who are getting rich. Eddie Farnsworth, a representative from the Phoenix area, is making $1 million, somewhere between $13 and $17 million, according to the Arizona Republic, on charter schools. So these guys control the charter schools and they get rich off the charter schools. We're going to talk about that with a lady, Jan Nichols, who there's an even bigger wrinkle in all of this.
And after that, I think we're going to have another show, folks, on
El Rojo Grande.
Rojo Grande.
Lots
we're going to have the
stuff.
Opposition. We're going to invite the supporters, the lawyers, and agents for this company to also come on the air. But we're going to have a show where we're going to give the voice to the opposition to this development.
Yes.
And hopefully that'll be in maybe 3 weeks. It would be the weekend.
The week after next.
Yeah.
Yeah, so look for a lot of El Rojo Grande. Don't forget, folks, you can catch this and all our shows on bbid.org. Check out our podcast on bbid.org. Listen to us.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.